Hello and welcome to the very first President's Perspective of 2012. It's the January edition, and as you well know, this is a half-hour chat with the President and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Dan Jones. My name is Jared Knight. On today's program, we're going to talk about some New Year's resolutions with a university twist. We're also going to talk about what will likely be the largest scale increase in faculty in this institution's history. But first, we'd like to continue our discussion of the university's seven guiding principles, specifically research. Dr. Jones, welcome once again to KETR.
Thank you, Jared, and Happy New Year.
We made it to 2012.
I'm excited. Well, as you mentioned, Jared, we've had in our series here last fall and throughout this spring, we've been talking about the university's seven guiding principles. And the theme for today's program is research. And our guiding principle reads as follows. Our goal is to strengthen the nexus between teaching and research in ways that speak to the university's imperative both to create and disseminate knowledge. And let me pause for a minute on that word imperative, because, of course, all of these guiding principles are imperatives. They are mandates, they're obligations. They are woven into our mission. But the imperative to both create and to disseminate knowledge is something that is at the heart of any university's mission. You know, every university is different. We serve a different constituency, different regions. We have different circumstances surrounding the way we grew and developed. And while teaching is critical, there's still probably the essential element of a university mission. A university has to be involved in knowledge discovery and knowledge creation. That's simply that's the way you get into this business.
Right.
Faculty members come up through their graduate education. The pinnacle, their culminating requirement of their education is a dissertation, which is a piece of original research. So this is what we're trained to do. This is one of the primary reasons we exist. So obviously this belongs as a guiding principle. Our guest for this first segment of the program is Dr. Larry Lemansky, our Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs. Dr. Lemansky, welcome.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Good.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Dr. Lemansky's been with us, I guess, about 2.5 years now, right?
Yes, that's right.
Joined us from Temple University and has a long and distinguished career in research. In fact, I believe you've spent your entire professional life in research or research administration, and certainly you bring that to A&M Commerce.
Yes, I've had many years of experience in research, primarily in the biomedical field, and certainly I continue that to a certain extent here at Texas A&M University Commerce with the outstanding honors program that we have here and being able to have some honors students come in the laboratory, as well as I have a postdoctoral fellow who's funded by a National American Heart Association grant. So, I like to keep involved with research along with my other duties here.
And I know you're far too modest to brag on yourself, but in your career you have either been a principal investigator or a co-principal investigator on something more than $40 million of funded research.
That is correct, yeah. Either a principal investigator or what's called a principal offer, which means that I was – it's like a principal investigator, but it was for some center of excellence funding that was obtained when I was in Florida. And those are some very large grants. One was $10 million. The other was $5 million to start centers. And so, it's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed all those things.
Tell us a little bit about your research, and keep it at a layman's level as you can. Remember, I'm an English teacher.
Well, actually, I've been interested in embryonic heart research. So I've been studying the heart for many years. And one of the animal models that I've selected is the Mexican axolotl, which is a salamander. Now, I didn't select this because it's a cute little vertebrate. In fact, it is a cute little vertebrate. But because this particular strain of salamander, which comes from Mexico, carries a genetic mutation, an abnormal gene in which the heart forms but fails to beat. And a number of years ago, I wanted to answer the question, why does this heart fail to beat in these embryos? It's genetically linked, obviously. There are carrier parents. The parents that carry the gene are normal, yet 25% of the offspring from a given spawning, and a spawning can be as many as 600 embryos, 25% of those would have hearts that didn't beat. And so I wanted to understand why that failure took place. And by understanding the failure, I hope to be able to explain how normal heart succeeds. Mm-hmm. And so we set out to do that with some experiments. And very briefly, we were able to show that there was a component in the normal embryo that would actually rescue the mutant hearts when we put them in culture. And that component was the gut. It's called anterior endoderm, but basically it's the gut. Mm-hmm. And so if we were to take a mutant heart, put it in a drop of saline solution, a little salt solution, add that normal endoderm into it, those mutant hearts would suddenly turn into normal hearts. Going back just a little further, if you look inside of the mutant heart cells by high-resolution microscopy, such as an electron microscope, you're able to show that the mutant hearts fail to beat for a very good reason. They don't have the machinery to beat. They don't have organized myofibrils, as they're called. These are little protein filaments. These myofibrils are protein filaments that slide back and forth, and that's what causes their heart to beat. The same things that cause human hearts to beat. They're virtually identical at the cell level to the human heart. So basically, we did some experiments. We were able to find the chemical then that caused this correction to take place. And that chemical is an RNA, ribonucleic acid. So we then went and looked at the gene that made that material and took it to the gene level. And so we were then able to take that gene from the salamander and put it in bacteria so that the bacteria could grow. Bacteria grow very rapidly,
right,
and it would produce large amounts of this RNA, and we could do experiments with it. And the most exciting thing I would say is, yes, it was in a salamander, and, you know, it's nice to rescue a salamander heart,
right,
but on the other hand, was it similar to humans? Certainly the structure of the human heart is virtually identical at the cell level to the salamander. And here at Texas A&M University Commerce, we have now taken human heart RNA that we were able to purchase from a commercial source, repeat this experiment with the salamander mutant embryos, and the human heart RNA rescues the mutant hearts. And so we're looking to clone that at this point.
And so now there's an opportunity in theory to have some implications for human hearts.
Absolutely.
Right.
And this is something, you know, we've been funded for a number of years from the National Institutes of Health and American Heart Association to get it to this stage. And the implications are for people who have cardiac disease. In other words, people who have had, let's say, heart attacks where a certain area of the heart has been damaged, you potentially could take this human RNA, apply it to those affected areas, and that would cause that tissue to redifferentiate, reform into normal contracting heart.
Right.
And so people who have had heart attacks could return to pre-heart attack activity levels. And so that's what our goal is at this point, to move it to that level.
Right.
If you would, talk about grant funding as a principal investigator and the role that that plays in research. Would you be able to make the sort of discoveries that you're making in terms of hearts on a cellular level without grant funding? I mean, is it possible? Obviously, there's a passion for finding the answer even without the grant funding.
Really, in order to be able to conduct the sophisticated molecular biology experiments and get the equipment necessary to be able to make these artificial genes to insert into bacteria,
right,
for example, you really need to have grant money to be able to do that.
Right.
So, you know, grants were really essential, and funding from the NIH and American Heart Association were essential in order to bring the work to this stage.
But the research, I think, being something that obviously can be funded, that's just something that everybody can look at and go, I can see some very positive implications down the road for something like that.
Yeah, you know, and of course, Jared, in this time of fiscal austerity that we're in, and we've all heard this stuff on the news and from politicians, when they start talking about research funding as being an easy place to start cutting.
Well, sure.
You know, I mean, you can imagine someone saying, I've discovered that there is someone in Texas who does research on salamander hearts. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
And then leaves out the second
like
part
that,
saying, but this might lead to effective treatments for heart attack victims.
Right.
Yeah. This is something that, you know, I've had to deal with for many years.
Yeah.
I mean, the NIH said, well, why do you want to study salamander hearts? And I was able to explain that adequately.
Right.
And they did continue to give me funding, and we're now at being able to look at the human RNA component as well that is apparently very similar. We still need to sequence that. I might go back and mention, you know, when we did the RNA with the salamander, we sequenced that. So it's a very specific chemical, and we know the sequence, we know the gene that puts it, that makes it. We patented that sequence, and that was something that, that our university wanted us to do. We are going to be doing a similar thing here with the human RNA. And I just wanted to mention that I have some people that have worked with me on it. Dr. Andrei Kochagarov, he's a postdoctoral fellow that joined me from – he was from University of Southern California. He's been here about a year. And then several individuals from the Honors College. Ashley Mosley is working on this, William Leon, and Jessica Meyer. And they're all looking at various aspects of how the human heart RNA or how the axolotl may continue and be successful in this differentiation process.
Do you oversee research of other types? I think this project obviously warrants all the discussion we're willing to give it. But there are other types of research going on here at the university that you're also involved in as well.
Well, this is the main project that I'm involved in, what I just described to you. But certainly across campus, there are just numerous exciting projects. Equally exciting to this, I'm sure, or maybe even more exciting to some people, maybe not to me, given that I have a vested interest in this. Right. But I love all of the wonderful things going on here in the research area, and there are many. And I also, when I talk about research and scholarly activities, I'm talking about other things as well. You know, things in the literature and languages, things in the art department, the accomplishments, the music, and, you know, the people in physics working with the people in music to look at some of the physical aspects right. of how music is made. And these are all, exciting projects that are going on across campus. I think one other thing that demonstrates the upswing in research here at the university, last year the funding was at $4.5 million. It's gone up to $7 million this year. And we want to continue that trend as we move forward. And so I think, the university is on an upswing to be able to do that.
I know Dr. Lemanski mentioned some of the other exciting research that's going on here. And I think one of the most exciting things for me to watch over as president is to see how many of our students, especially our undergraduate students, are finding opportunities to get involved in some leading-edge research. In the sciences, some of the examples that he shared, we just got some great news last week from Dr. Shannon Carter, who is one of our faculty members in the Department of Literature and Language, that a group of four undergraduates have had their research findings accepted for presentation at the 4Cs conference. 4Cs is the preeminent conference on college composition. This is thrilling. This is the kind of stuff that any full-time faculty member would be thrilled to have their papers accepted at this conference. And the fact that we have undergraduates presented, I think, is a real testament to the quality of the work that goes on here. And really, our goal as leaders in this enterprise is to nurture and sustain this environment that is conducive to inquiry.
Right.
I had a very wise mentor in my graduate program who once said that the answers that we produce are far less important than the questions that we ask. And when we think about research, it's really the art of asking good questions. And that requires an atmosphere, an environment that encourages inquiry. The funding is critical, of course, and your question is an excellent one. You know, how much of this could go on without funding? The answer is, well, not a whole lot, actually.
Right.
But the funding only leverages what must be there, and it's that atmosphere of inquiry that drives research.
If I could just comment a little bit further about the involvement of undergraduate students in the research and graduate students too. I think it's one thing to sit in a lecture and hear about the didactic material and, let's say in a biology class or a chemistry class, hear about how chemicals go together and how, animals may develop and you draw things on the board or show a PowerPoint. But it's another to go in the laboratory then and actually conduct experiments to demonstrate what's being taught in the classroom. The impact that this makes on students and the excitement that it brings to the students is phenomenal. And I think, when we talk about student retention and so forth, having students involved and working closely with faculty members under these circumstances, I think really helps in that area, keeping students going to want to get that degree and to want to continue in their fields.
Right. So,
talking about research as a guiding principle here on The President's Perspective. Stick around. When we come back, we're also going to talk to Dr. Lemanski more in terms of oversight, as he may well be a part of the largest beef up in faculty here on this campus in its history. And so we'll talk about that as well as New Year's resolutions from a university perspective. It's all here on The President's Perspective, only on your station, 88.9 KETR.
I'm Notably Texan's Matt Minky, sending out a Texas-sized thank you to each of the contributors during KETR's recent pledge drive. It's because of generous gifts from our members that we are able to continue to bring you the programming you love each and every day here on your station. So thanks again. We could not do it without you.
Welcome back to The President's Perspective. It's a half-hour chat with the President and CEO of TAMUC, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. It seems that the university is about to undergo one of the largest faculty hiring opportunities that we've ever had in the history of this institution. Talk about that.
Yeah, Jared, this is an exciting time. It's also a little bit of a terrifying time to be hiring so many people all at once. As you know, because we've talked about it on the program on more than one occasion, we are in the midst of a pretty phenomenal enrollment spurt. And in the fall of 2010, we grew at about a 12% pace. This fall, we're up over 8%. We continue to hover in the list of the state's fastest growing universities. We're somewhere around 4 or 5 in the state. So we've had some phenomenal growth. It placed some strains on us, but now that that growth is bringing with it additional resources, we are in a position to really expand our capacity in terms of faculty expertise and faculty capability. So we are adding about 30 new positions, and we are committing to fill about 30 existing but vacant positions, which in some cases we've held vacant because of budgetary constraints. So this year, we're in the midst of hiring 60-plus new faculty members, full-time faculty members. And you mentioned this may be the largest hiring wave in the university's history, and it may well be. I haven't done the research on this. I know in the early 70s, there was a parallel time of rapid growth. So I know that there was some fast hiring going on then as well, but that's been a few years ago. This is an exciting time. Of course, Dr. Lemanski, who is here for this segment as well, is right in the middle of that. Dr. Lemanski, can you talk a little bit about what it means to be bringing on so many new faculty all at one time?
Well, President Jones, this is really an exciting opportunity for our university, and I think for those new faculty members that are coming in here. You know, we're growing rapidly as a university in all areas, certainly student enrollment, research, and growing in just a variety of ways. Bringing in faculty through national searches, and we're using national searches really to fill all of these 60 positions, essentially, and there'll probably be a few more than 60 positions. But it's a real good time for us here at Texas A&M University Commerce to be recruiting, because we have the luxury, and it is a luxury certainly, to have this increased enrollment to the point where it's creating revenue that we're able to develop new positions. Also, the state of Texas seems to be doing better than some of the other states in terms of the economic situation here. So we're able to recruit people coming from other parts of the country where things are not as good, and they see this as a real opportunity. President Jones has been able to continue to locate money to provide merit increases, for example, for faculty. That's unheard of in some states. And so, you know, when we're recruiting and we're able to show what we have with all the new facilities, the beautiful campus that we have, you know, it becomes a very attractive place for a faculty member to come. Right. So we believe that we're going to be able to attract, and we're already in the process of doing this, of attracting truly outstanding national and international class faculty members that could go to a lot of other places. Right. But they're choosing to come here because of the tremendous opportunity that exists.
You know, and Jared, I might add that the process of hiring a faculty member is an involved one, and needfully so. The faculty member brings not just a set of skills. A faculty member brings that thing we were talking about in the previous segment, a spirit of inquiry, an inquisitiveness, an instinct for excellence, so that when we're seeking high-quality faculty members to come here, we're looking for people who can contribute to the university mission, not just teach their classes, not just get some papers published, but really engage in the life of the university.
Right.
I think the exciting thing about doing so many searches all at one time is that it is prompting us to ask some questions of ourselves about who do we want to be in 5 and 10 years or 20 years from now, because we will be recruiting faculty members, not all, but you know, certainly a portion will be spending their careers with us here. And we want people who will help not just do the work of the university, but lead the work of the university and carry us into the next era of greatness in this university's history. So, yeah, we're asking ourselves not just, you know, can you teach freshman comp or can you oversee a lab, but where do you see yourself being 5, 10, 15 years?
Right.
How do you see yourself fitting with this university? Does this university look like the kind of place that will allow your career to flourish? And it's a really exciting time.
And speaking of sort of changing your position in the future, I think this is a great segue into our next topic to discuss. It's a new year that always stirs feelings of a new beginning, new opportunities, and in some cases, maybe a clean slate. It's that time of year when many folks are thinking about improvements they'd like to make in their lives, and it's no different for an institution of higher learning.
That's true, Jared, and you know, something about the beginning of the year, it's a time to reflect and it's a time to set goals, and you know, we call them New Year's resolutions, but really it's sort of an annual inventory. Where have I been, or where has our institution been, and what direction would we like to see it go in? Have you made any New Year's resolutions?
Just the one that I make every year, and that is to perhaps weigh less. If I can get to the end of this year and weigh less than I do now, I think
be less of a person 12 months from now than
right.
you are now.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
I
know
you
got
pretty typical.
Yeah, you have a lot of company with that. I always. My perennial New Year's resolution is to watch more television. You know, I just
if you could just find the time to turn on the TV,
time to turn on the TV a little more often. You know, but it's always a struggle. But you know, as a university, you know, we don't do this in a formal way, but we do pause and reflect on where we want to be. And I think, of course, we've been talking about growth both in today's program and throughout last year. And I think one of our resolutions is to continue growing. But to grow in a very high-quality way, one of the ways when I'm talking with deans and other members of the leadership team, yeah, we want to grow, but we want to grow in the right way and for the right reasons. And we've been very successful in doing that over the last couple of years. We have a enrollment management team that is absolutely first rate. And for them, it's not just about the numbers. You know, they want to get good students. They want to get students who want to come here and who are excited about coming here, and we'll have a wonderful experience. So certainly growth figures into the equation. And it's also spurred a lot of very interesting conversations around campus. It's like, okay, well, all right, we want to grow, but how long and how big?
Right.
You know,
right.
those are really good questions.
Sure.
And during fall 2010, a little over a year ago, it was a squeeze, you know, when all of those students showed up and we were scheduling new sections and we were increasing class sizes. And, yeah, there was a lot of scrambling going on to accommodate all of them. We don't want to grow in such a way that we're always trying to catch up
right.
with the demand. You know, but these new faculty positions obviously will help with that, our new facilities. It's okay to be a little squeezed, but it's not okay to be just sort of constantly struggling to keep your head above water. But again, those are great discussions to be having. I think another New Year's resolution, and this has to do with just continuing a very creative conversation on campus, and that is, how will A&M Commerce continue to sharpen its definition of its leadership position in higher education? What is it that we really want to be known for? And that begins with, what are we already known for?
Right.
You know, and we have a well-deserved reputation that's growing stronger every day as a university of opportunity. Our Division of Student Access and Success is called that for a reason. We want people to have the opportunity to get an education, and we want to give them the tools that they will need to be successful. So clearly, that's a leadership position for
right.
us. That's something that makes this university special. That's a marketing niche, if you will,
sure.
if we want to use that term. But in what other ways do we want to define our leadership position? I would go back to some of the things that we were discussing with Dr. Lemansky. Let's talk about some of the great research that's going on around campus. We have some world-class researchers here. We have people here who are regularly invited to international conferences to share their research findings.
Right.
And those people are doing that. They are contributing to the creation of knowledge in their discipline in Commerce, Texas. And that's something that we can – I think we can proudly claim a leadership position in. We need to define that. We need to just make that a topic of conversation. We're no longer the little, you know, sleepy little university that's stuck out in rural East Texas.
Right.
Not that that's a bad thing.
Right. But things are happening here. And
right.
That's what's exciting. In fact, it feels kind of like the resolutions for the university are very much a reiteration of let's do what we've been doing.
Right.
Let's keep it manageable, but let's do what we've been doing. This has been a nice growth period, and it would be great for it to continue in much the same way. So let's keep on keeping on.
Let's keep on keeping on. You know, I sometimes, when I'm in Austin and other centers of power, I hear a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth about the need to reinvent higher education and how
sure.
higher education is not sustainable. We don't need to reinvent Texas A&M University Commerce. This is a great place, 122 years old, getting ready to enter our 123rd year, has transformed the lives of well over 100,000 successful graduates. But we always need to be nudging ourselves forward.
Right.
You know, and defining that next goal, defining that next aspiration. And one final New Year's resolution, and this is one that has been a frequent topic of discussion on this program, in terms of a leadership position, and we are well on our way to attaining this, to be known as the local university with a global reach. We've worked so hard and done so much in our international programming. This spring, in fact, right now, we have 149 students from Korea arriving as a cohort. They've been preparing for a year in Seoul. We've talked about this program before. Well, they're here, and they're starting their A&M Commerce degree. And that's one of many programs around the world that is giving our students here in Commerce, Texas, access to an institution which has a global reach.
Here's to 2012 being a banner calendar year. For A&M Commerce.
I'm excited about it, Jared.
Well, as we wrap up, Happy New Year once again.
And to all of our listeners, Happy New Year.
Our guest has been Dr. Larry Lemansky, Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs at Texas A&M University Commerce. Dr. Lemansky, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight to be here.
Dr. Jones, a pleasure as always.
Thank you, Jared.
This has been the January 2012 edition of The President's Perspective. You can find this and other episodes archived online at the new KETR.org. KETR is a free and universal broadcast service of Texas A&M University Commerce and streams online around the world 24/7 at KETR.org. Support this and other programs by clicking Support This Station at the top of the webpage. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.